Welcome to Sunday Vibes Extra Time, the podcast brought to you by our friends at Now TV. Stream on the go with a Now TV Sky Sports Mobile Month Pass for just £5.99. You'll get unlimited access to five Sky Sports channels, including Sky Sports Premier League, directly to your smartphone. To buy your Sky Sports Mobile Month Pass for just £5.99, go to nowtv.com.
It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to Sunday Vibes Extra Time. On today's show, we're discussing how the Bundesliga can reclaim its spot at the top of European football, focusing on three specific clubs. Then I believe Joe is doing facts with Rafa Benitez.
I am.
You excited? Oh yeah, by the way, Doogie's here as well. Let's get right into it. Kick us off, Doogs.
So the club that I will be talking about in just a little bit of time will be Schalke. And their spectacular collapse this season got me thinking. You know, because it doesn't seem like these sort of spectacular collapses are isolated instances in the Bundesliga. So I'm going to take you a little bit back to the 13-14 season when Dortmund were playing under Klopp and they finished second. But they only won four of their opening 19 games the following season to leave them bottom. Klopp then left and they eventually recovered to finish seventh. That same year, Borussia Mönchengladbach finished third, but didn't win a single one of their opening five games of 16-17, conceding 12 in the process. Favre was fired. That same year, Cologne finished fifth with their best league finish since 1991-92, but last year finished rock bottom, 9 points behind 17th place Hamburg, so a massive gap there.
So what you're saying is it's just like roulette.
Yeah, it seems like the teams that aren't Dortmund and Bayern routinely have these sort of periods of just chaos.
Well, look at Schalke.
Exactly.
You're about to go into
exactly. And, you know, the Bundesliga outside of Bayern and Dortmund, in terms of who finishes in the top four, has been pretty varied. So 14 different sides have finished in the top four since the year 2000, which is kind of crazy to think about.
But is that a good thing, in your opinion, or a bad thing?
I think it means that there's not enough good consistent quality, and I think it's a bit of a free for all in terms of who finishes third and fourth. With comparison to the Premier League, there's been 10 different sides that have finished in the top four since the year 2000, and that had the year that Leicester obviously finished champions. Yeah. That's had Newcastle twice, and I think Leeds once in that time as well. So the top four has actually been pretty solidly six sides for since 2000 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I'd just say that there seems like a general drop in quality in the Bundesliga in the last 4 or 5 years without anyone really noticing because their national team's been doing so well. I mean, no one's finished in the top three of the Ballon d'Or since Manuel Neuer in 2014. They've actually only had four people that have finished in the top three of the Ballon d'Or this century. That was Oliver Kahn, finished third twice, Ribéry in 2013, and Manuel Neuer in 2014. They haven't had a Champions League finalist since 2013. They haven't had a Europa League finalist since 2009. And they've dropped from second to fourth in the UEFA coefficient rankings. And it seems like the sort of lack of competitiveness in the top of the Bundesliga, in that Bayern can pick up, you know, whoever they want from clubs around them, which, you know, some argue has made them soft when it comes to the latter end of the Champions League. Even with Guardiola, they never reached a final.
Yeah.
Or with, you know, a Champions League expert and Ancelotti never reached a final. And it seems that, you know, the lack of competitiveness has also affected the amount of money that comes into the league as well. It took until 2016 for them to get a $1 billion TV rights deal, which even then was half that of the Premier League. So the money that these clubs have to spend seems like it's really affected the competitiveness of the league and the general quality over time. I don't know what you think about it, Joe.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what they're struggling with is sustained competitiveness. I think there are occasions of competitiveness where you've mentioned there a team suddenly sprouts up out of nowhere and competes with Bayern or Borussia Dortmund for a season. Mm-hmm. But then what happens, and you see similar things happen in Italy and in France, where a team puts together a season of really good football, their best players get poached by one of the two top teams. So you've seen it with teams in Italy, you've seen it with PSG going and taking the likes of Kylian Mbappe off of Monaco, and you see it with Bayern Munich going and taking the likes of Nicolas Sula off of Hoffenheim, who were putting together a relatively decent run. And you could probably think of the likes of Timo Werner, who I'm going to go on and talk about. They might well take off of RB Leipzig, who are probably going to finish third this season. And that is a significant problem, and a problem that needs to be addressed by, I don't know whether it's the German equivalent of the FA or whether it's structurally, but it's something that you very rarely see in the Premier League, and it's because teams can say no to big money. Mm-hmm. And that's partially down to TV deals, commercial deals, but the German FA or the German boards aren't necessarily doing enough to combat Bayern just going, I'm going to take this season Wagner off you, I'm going to take Süle off you, I'm going to take Leon Goretzka off you, I'm going to take Serge Gnabry off you, and all of it for a pittance. Pennies on the dollar. They're not 60 to 80 million pound moves, these players. They're picking up Nicolas Süle for sub 50.
I mean, I think their record's still 35 for Tolisso.
Exactly. So. And this is definitely a problem. So I think what we're going to hopefully address in today's podcast is how to get a club a sustained competitive push at a Bundesliga title. Are we all in agreement?
Yep.
Something like that. So who wants to start? Am I starting? Are you starting, Pat?
I think you should start off.
All right, I'll start. I'll kick us off with Leipzig then, because I think
they feel like the closest.
I think they are the closest, both on and off the pitch, to being able to provide a sustained period of pressure on definitely Borussia Dortmund and hopefully in the future Bayern Munich. I think Bayern Munich to provide sustained pressure on them is maybe still like five seasons away.
Okay.
Because I think that they're so far in the distance in terms of financial power, in terms of just a name that players want to play for as well. If you're German and you're growing up in any academy in a German club, your dream is to go and play for Bayern Munich. And I think that hopefully can be changed over the next few years. And I think that Dortmund have gone some way to arrest that by showing real faith in youth and promoting from within and not being afraid to play 20-year-olds and 19-year-olds in defensive positions. And I think Leipzig have gone away about that in a similar way. Although they may not have necessarily purchased from within Germany, they've gone to Ligue 1 and taken some really special talent out of there recently.
Yeah.
And I think that by having a very young setup, they're more likely to get the next breed of superstar come through and go, I want to go to Leipzig because I know I'm going to play lots of games, going to play at a decent level. I might be playing Champions League football. And they pay pretty well. Like, they are backed by a massive consortium in Red Bull.
Which helps. Yeah.
They've got a really, really strong network of feeder clubs in Salzburg and New York Red Bulls in particular over recent years. And I think that is hopefully a blueprint to challenge Bayern in the future. Whereas Bayern, you're seeing average squad ages at sort of 28, 29. You're seeing Leipzig and Dortmund's around 23. And I think their hope is that Bayern can't recruit 9 20-year-olds to then just go into the first team straight away.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a period of change over the next few years. And Leipzig in particular need to capitalize on it because 17-18, obviously, their first ever season in the Bundesliga in 16-17 and crushed it, finished second, an incredible feat. Then it was the classic, you've spoken about it, Bundesliga drop-off. From second down to sixth, problems that were both personnel on the field and off the field. Obviously, Ralf Hasenhüttl left at the end of that season and chose not to come back at the end of 17-18. And rather than replace him immediately, they appointed Ralf Rangnick, who was then sporting director, and he chose to come back in to the setup and basically plug a gap until they could get either another massive name manager or the man they wanted. And they ended up getting the man they wanted. Obviously, Julian Nagelsmann, who was much coveted by Dortmund and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich as well. So that was a really big coup for them. At the start of this season, I think it was about August sort of time, they announced they'd agreed a deal with Julian Nagelsmann that he would join next summer. So Nagelsmann laid it out publicly. He said, look, I'm going to be at Hoffenheim for one more year and then I'm going to be going to a new project and it's going to be Leipzig. And I think that's an exciting step for Leipzig, right? Because that's, to me, is the first bit of proof that they are willing to compete with Bayern. Because Bayern wanted Nagelsmann. I think it's fairly obvious Bayern wanted Nagelsmann. I know that like the directors and stuff were coming out publicly, weren't they? And they were
pretty
saying,
much.
Oh, he's a wicked manager. And I don't actually think Kovac was their first choice. And I don't... Do you think they'd be happy with how Kovac has done first season?
I think they'll get rid of him if they don't win the Bundesliga.
If they don't win the Bundesliga, I think they'll get rid of him, sure. But I think that he'll win the Bundesliga and that'll buy him another year and he'll probably go at the end of the following year.
But I don't think they would have... I don't think they wanted him. I think they were forced into getting him because, obviously, Jupp Heynckes couldn't stay forever, and they were well aware that he couldn't stay forever, and they wanted Nagelsmann, and Nagelsmann picked Leipzig, which is a really interesting step, and steps you start to see players take when they go into Dortmund rather than going to Bayern Munich.
Yeah, you'd like to think from a Bayern perspective that their transfer business will be done above Kovac's head this year, because you can't, personally, I haven't seen enough of Kovac this year to he hasn't shown enough to prove that he could be the manager for the next 5-6 years, I don't think. So if they're thinking long term and they do need a massive rebuild there in certain areas, then I hope that their board really goes for it this summer, and you know, it's not necessarily down to Kovac, because I can't really see him lasting.
I think they already are doing that though. Like I think they've always done that to some extent in Germany. Like Germany kind of leads the way in terms of like having people who build the squad who are not the coach. But it looks like that's going to happen. Like Luca Hernandez, that looks like it's going to get over the line.
Worryingly, Timo Werner. This is another worry. This is the classic old school worry, is that Timo Werner, probably the outstanding German talent in terms of strikers coming through at the moment, at a challenging club, a prospering club like Leipzig, Bayern are going to go, you've let his contract run down too far.
Yeah.
And we're going to take him for pennies on the dollar again.
And after that, it'll be Kai Havertz at Bayer Leverkusen, or it'll be whoever the next great star is, you know, Florian Grillitsch coming out of Hoffenheim, like whatever it is, it'll be something.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I was looking at Leipzig's season so far, and you know, they're performing pretty well. They've, what I would consider this to be sort of a stepping stone season, a season of transition. I think Leipzig fans were open to that at the beginning of the season because they knew Nagelsmann was coming in the following year. They're currently third in the Bundesliga. You know, they've got, I believe, Jesse Marsch is the assistant manager there. They took him off of New York Red Bulls in the summer. He joined when Rangnick came in as head coach.
Interesting.
At the sporting director position. And I was looking at some of their numbers, and you know, they're doing pretty well. They're third in the Bundesliga for expected goals. They're second in the Bundesliga for expected goals against. They are actually underperforming comparatively to their expected goals, despite Timo Werner being an outstanding striker. I think 50 goals, expected goals has them on. They've only scored 44. But their defence has been incredible.
Yeah.
They've only conceded 20 goals this season. And there are only four clubs in Europe's top five leagues that have got a better defensive record than them this season. They are PSG, who are obviously crushing
Liverpool.
The league in. No, Liverpool don't. City, 18. They've conceded.
Juve?
Atletico 19 and Juve 19.
Yeah.
So, comparatively to some of Europe's big boys, they're doing seriously well with a kind of structure of, we're going to be implementing young players, and their model financially is very much, we're going to sign young players and then we might have to move them on in the future, but we're hoping we can keep them for as long as possible. And that is partially helped by having the outstanding Austrian club in Salzburg, who are arguably better than Leipzig in a lot of areas, you know, especially in Europe this season. They've been brilliant, and Leipzig have really struggled at times. In the Europa League, Salzburg have been sweeping teams apart, and obviously they were both drawn in the same group, which caused a lot of controversy. But if I looked at some of their statistics in terms of spending recently, they still spend a lot of money. Their net spend over the past three seasons is still minus £80 million.
Really?
Which surprised me.
Yeah. But they just take constant punts on people though, right? Like they brought in Nordi Mukiele, they brought in Ibrahim Okonate, they bring in like Augustin, like they're constantly like taking tons and tons of punts. Yeah. And if one of those works out, then they pay. Like if they sold Forsberg last summer, then they'd probably be positive.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to think, this is £80 million in the hole with a £66 million sale of Naby Keita. So they are still,
that's
like
a fair point.
3 years ago, £72 million spent in their first season in the Bundesliga. Didn't sell a single player for profit. The season after that, £25 million sold, £62 million spent. Last summer, £72 million sold. So that's obviously the Naby Keita deal.
Yeah.
£43 million spent. So that's their first year really in the green.
But then would you not expect, like, if Werner's going to go this summer, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the summer that they're like, okay, we sell pretty much everybody who anyone's interested in, and then we rebuild again, and we try, and then we hope that generation in 4 or 5 years' time will win. Because if you're going to lose Werner, then I think you've got to, basically, at some point, you have to make the decision of, are we going to sell these players and get as much money as possible, or are we going to try and keep them together for 2 years longer than they'd like to be there in order to win something? And if Werner's going to go, I feel like you might as well start the selling process now.
But that's really going to be a big drop.
If it's Werner, then get rid of all of them.
Well, not all of them, but like if somebody comes in for Konate, that's fine. So
they probably should have sold Forsberg.
Or sell Upamecano or Konate, so you can keep the other one. Mm-hmm. Like they've just brought in Haidara, who came out of Salzburg. They'll probably get Samaseku like next January because they always do. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think
sell Poulsen maybe.
I don't know. I just think like if you lose Werner, it's unlikely you're going to win anything in the next couple of seasons unless Jean-Kevin Augustin goes supernova, which is possible. Or Bruma has an amazing season. So I don't know, there's the part of me that thinks you've got to, like, clubs like that have to think in 5-year chunks. They're like, right, okay, we sell this generation, we buy a new generation, and we hope we can keep them together for 4 or 5 years, and we hope we get lucky with one of those.
But there is the argument to be made that rather than doing that, you've taken 60 million with Naby last summer.
Yeah.
You're going to take, let's say, 50 million with Timo this summer. They would probably have been getting closer to 100 to 150, I think, if they hadn't let his contract run down so far and so drastically, which they'll be annoyed about.
Does it expire next summer?
Next summer. So, I mean, Real Madrid looking for a striker probably wouldn't have been scared to pay 100 million for Timo Werner, given some of his numbers.
Yeah.
And I've got some of his numbers here, and they are truly frightening. They are like... basically 0.6 expected goals this season, taking nearly 4 shots per 90. Just a general nightmare, like 1.4 dribbles per 90. He's up, like, his numbers stacked up against Harry Kane, they're pretty tight. Like, he, for a 22, is he now, I believe?
22,
yeah.
22-year-old, there are arguments you made he would have been a £100 to £150 million sale this summer that they missed out on.
Yeah, definitely.
But then equally, even at 50... him and Naby, that's £110 million in. There is an argument to be made. Now is the time to lock down players like Europa Meccano's to long-term deals with maybe £100 million to £200 million buyout clauses and then go and spend £100 million on either one big name that's going to really carry you and be a big replacement for Timo Werner, or two big names that you hope can cover his output and then really challenge for a Bundesliga title where Dortmund are probably going to lose Jadon Sancho. Bayern are going to have a serious drop off with the sales of Franck Ribéry, Arjen Robben, trying to replace a few players in the midfield and a whole squad turnover there. So I would argue, I'm going to like slightly disagree. I think now is the time to strike in terms of pushing for silverware in Germany.
I'm up for that if you can find someone to replace Werner. That's my issue.
Very hard. I have got some solutions to problems that I've identified. I've identified the main issues being the sale of Naby Keita last summer and the lack of replacement up until January when, of course, Haidara came in.
Well, also they've got Tyler Adams coming in from New York Red Bulls, exactly. Who looks amazing.
His first 6 appearances in the Bundesliga, some of his statistics
look dirty.
Fantastic.
They're unbelievable.
And obviously, both of these players have come from New York feeder teams in Red Bull and Salzburg, which is a massive positive, and it's happened in the past. We've seen a lot of other players come through. The sale of Timo Werner is problem number 2, and the struggle to keep hold of centre-backs as the problem number 3, because Ibrahim Konate and Deo Upamecano, everybody's looking at them. Every single day on my Twitter, it's Ibrahim Konate's linked to Arsenal.
Upamecano, United.
Upamecano, Manchester United, Atletico Madrid,
Weird
Juventus.
Weird, kind of switched, though, because last summer it was all Upamecano, and now Konate's arguably just as sought after.
Well, he's had a tremendous season. I think Upamecano's maybe had injury because Orban's played a lot, right?
Yeah, well,
Orban's had a really good season, actually.
But I think he's a little bit older, isn't he? Was he 26?
Yeah, Orban's not a guy that people are going to go for. But like, but I think as a result, it's kind of one person next to Orban much of the time.
It is, yeah. I mean, Konate has actually put up the most interceptions of any teenager in Europe's top 5 leagues this season.
Yeah, I had a look at Konate. I like Konate as a target for Arsenal.
Yeah?
How
much would you be willing to pay for him as an Arsenal fan?
35, 40.
Do you think they'd sell for... I don't think they'd sell for that.
I think they would. It depends what they sell Werner for, but it sounds like they're going to sell Werner for a reasonable price. And yes, he's got a year left on his contract, but I think if they say, you know what, we can sell Konate for 35, and that means we... German clubs tend to sell for reasonable prices. They do.
Yeah, and, they do, you're right.
And if they think, okay, well, we can sell one of our centre-backs to keep the other 19-year-old centre-back, I think they do it.
But here's one thing I want to say is... So I've obviously identified the problem of the Timo Werner replacement. I want to throw it to you guys. Do you sell to Bayern Munich at 50 to 60 or do you go 25 to 40 and get him outside of Germany?
Sorry, as in sell for 25 to 40?
25 to 40 and take a serious cut on profit in order to offload him to a Chelsea or to a Real Madrid in order to keep him out of the Bundesliga.
Oh, I see.
Or
keep
him away from
competition.
Do you go for and take the big money that Bayern Munich are going to probably pay more because they...
Okay, but what did you say the max was there by 60-70.
Yeah, maybe 60-70. I don't
know. So say I could,
I wouldn't, sorry.
No, go on.
I would have thought that you could sell him to Liverpool for the similar price of that. I don't see one of Liverpool being like, they'll be like, we can only offer 40 for Timo Werner. I think Leipzig are in a great position to sell, not just to Bayern Munich, to anyone.
But I don't agree.
And what about really?
I think they're in a poor position. They've got no contractual standpoint. Bayern Munich are going to come in and speak to his agent, and you know that's going to happen, and he's going to want to play for Bayern Munich. Liverpool can go, okay, well, if you want him to not be in the Bundesliga, we're not going to be paying as much.
But then they'll be like, well, you won't have him.
Well, then he's going to go to Bayern. This is the point I'm making, is I would take a massive cut fee.
I wouldn't take a massive. I'd take like a 15, maybe 20 mil haircut, like in order to...
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I really don't think it'll be that bad. Like, when you've seen some of the players go... Some players going with like a year left on their contract. Arsenal got 40 mil for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain with a year left on his contract, who at that point, by the way, was playing like right wing back and was not particularly highly rated.
And
like, so,
not even a regular starter.
Well, yeah, and his injuries have continued. But I mean, like, I think the Atletico Madrid would probably be interested, especially if they let Griezmann go and they'll be flush with cash. Yeah. Like, Real Madrid are going to be throwing money around like fucking drunken sailors. Like,
yeah, they for sure are.
Yeah, so,
I think Cardi goes, but I really think he wouldn't go.
Is that a step?
Keep him away, man. Keep him away from Bayern Munich. Just do all you can to sell him abroad.
Yeah, I don't know. I would to some extent. I actually don't think he'll be as good for Bayern Munich at first as he is for Leipzig now.
Well, where does he start? Does he start over Robert Lewandowski?
No,
does he start alongside him?
That's where your argument is, though. You say to him, like, okay, we're going to sell you outside the country, like, if we can. Do you really want to go to Bayern Munich, where Lewandowski has had one of the best seasons of his career,
He's still going, isn't he?
He's been amazing this season. I don't know, he's still at least going to have another couple of seasons. He's going to start every game in the Champions League. You're going to end up playing off the left. Like, do you want to play on the wing for Bayern Munich? Do you want to play as a centre forward?
We saw in the World Cup.
For Chelsea.
Not for Chelsea, but for Liverpool.
Or,
I don't know, he's not going to start for Liverpool either.
Bobby Firmino off, I reckon. But I think Bobby Firmino, maybe to a Real Madrid. I think one of those front three is going to be highly coveted by Real Madrid.
But it looks like it's going to be Mane.
If it is Sadio Mane, though, I still think that sort
Werner
of split striker, because it is like off the left, isn't it?
I know what you mean.
I'd rather sign Firmino and Salah than Mane every day of the week.
If you're Real Madrid,
yeah,
I'd rather sign.
I don't think Mane is in the top bracket of wingers.
I'd much rather buy Mane or Salah than Firmino if I were Real Madrid. Firmino's only worth having. Yeah, I like Firmino. He's good, but he's not an especially great goal scorer. And he's only really worth having if you've got a genuine superstar wide player who he's going to move around and create space for. And they don't have that guy anymore.
I was imagining that they did, you know, sign Firmino and a top winger as well.
But if they go for someone like Hazard, who's also not a goal scorer, then you kind of think, okay, well, who's scoring all the fucking goals in this team? Like,
yeah, I know.
Like, what's their lineup there?
I think
they still had Ronaldo, Firmino would be amazing.
The most obvious destination is Real Madrid, though, isn't it? Who are after a striker, but whether or not they're going to go for Mauro Icardi remains to be seen. Either way, I would try and keep him away from a German rival by taking a cut price fee is one of my solutions to the issue of the continued success of Bayern Munich within the Bundesliga.
But there's like that pecking order in the Bundesliga, which is both like a blessing and a curse, which is like, if you're like the second biggest club in the Bundesliga, you're going to lose players to Bayern Munich. Yep. But you can take players from the teams below you.
So this is my next point.
Do I know who you're going to go for?
This is my Timo Werner replacement. I'm putting balls on the wall. I'm spending a lot of cash to get Luka Jovic out.
Really? Because I was going to say for a minute, I might go for Sebastian Haller.
I looked at him for Schalke.
His numbers are unreal.
Yeah, incredible. So he's maybe they are incredible. But I don't know whether I need Sebastian Haller when I've got Poulsen in there, or whether I want a sort of explosive finisher akin to Timo Werner, like Luka Jovic. I mean, obviously, big clubs are going to be after Luka Jovic this summer. You're looking at the likes of Barcelona have been heavily linked. A number of Premier League clubs have been heavily linked. I think if you're Leipzig, this is a chance to put a statement of intent on the table and go, we are going to compete with Bayern Munich for the signings of players in this division. We're going to put a lot of money on the table for Luka Jovic. Obviously, incredible numbers this season. We don't really need to go into them because we've gone into them before, but it's like running like 0.7 expected goals, isn't he? Something like that. And take him from a lower level German side.
I just don't see it happening, though.
Surely, why? From his perspective, he's going to have so many offers on the table.
He'll have read stories, even if some of it's bullshit. He'll have read stories about like big clubs being interested.
Yeah.
He'll be like, "I'll sit out another year. I'll continue to bang goals." Like, why would I don't know? Like,
of course, but this is the time to strike.
But we know what Leipzig are going to do. Leipzig aren't going to go for Jovic. They're going to go for Batshuayi or Tammy Abraham or someone like that.
Well, they've been heavily linked with Abraham.
That would be such a Leipzig thing to do.
Yeah, it would. But this is my point, is they've got to rip up the... Like, Dortmund did it effectively for 2 to 3 seasons. I think where Dortmund potentially stall is by not being willing to take that next huge step. And I know that they are competing this season very effectively by... partially Bayern Munich dropping off a little bit, but also having success with those young players. I think at some stage, in order to compete with Bayern Munich, because at some stage Bayern are going to go, we're not spending 35 million on players anymore, here's 100 million for a player, which is going to happen maybe this summer, if not this summer, probably the summer after. Leipzig should just go, fuck it, we're going balls to the wall and we're going to compete with you for these big players. We're going to put our money on the table. They've got the money to do it.
Yeah, why not?
They've got the money to do it. And they might not be able to get a player like Luka Jovic, but I think they shouldn't...
at least bid someone up.
Get in there. Get in there and...
make a statement.
Make a statement with the striker signing. I mean, I also looked at the midfield problem potentially in terms of... do they need that Naby Keita replacement now they've bought in Haidara? Probably they don't. I think Haidara can fill that role. Whether or not he can fill it in a Nagelsmann system remains to be seen. I think Nagelsmann's going to want some signings, and I think he's probably going to switch up the 4-2-2-2. How many twos is it? That Rangnick's been playing. I don't...
But won't this be like the most talented squad he's ever got to work with?
Definitely. Oh, like, for sure.
Like,
but
when you look at players he's got at Hoffenheim, you're like, how did he get anything out of these people that you've never heard of?
For sure.
There's some quite useful
but
players.
Equally,
yeah, there are, but it's not a great squad.
No. Nah, but sometimes, not to be harsh on the worst players, but they're more malleable because of their level. Like, sometimes a player who's not great... is more willing to go into when he took, who did he take? Kevin Vogt, and he was a central midfielder at the time, brought him into Hoffenheim, was like, you're not going to be a centre mid anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to be playing as in centre back for me. Like, whether or not he could do that with certain names at Leipzig, I'm not so sure, but I'm sure he'll be excited about the squad. Anybody coming into that young squad will be excited. I do think there's potentially a left wing back area that they could improve on slightly. I've identified Ryan Sessegnon as a potential candidate there, especially with Fulham getting relegated this season, because that's going to happen, and I don't know how much longer they can expect to keep hold of Sessegnon in the championship. He's not going to be in the championship next season.
With that in mind, Mitrovic as well would be an interesting striker.
Have they paid the permanent fee for Mitrovic? Is that,
I think so,
because it was a loan, wasn't it?
I thought they'd done it because he's had an incredible season. Given how shit they've
incredible
been.
Season.
But if they really want it, I mean, they could even go like, they could go to Arsenal and be like, well, we want Lacazette. Like, and be like, you need money, we want Lacazette, like, you've got another striker, what are you going to do?
It's
like,
not the worst shout.
Like, if you just want to make a statement, like, they can go and do something like that.
Because I think Nagelsmann's going to play 3 at the back. I can't see him being that different to how he's lined up at Hoffenheim, where he's seen so much success, you know, back-to-back Champions League places. I can't see him going, I'm coming in and I'm now going to operate with a 4 at the back and I'm going to mix it up and stick with the Leipzig style of 4-2-2-2. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to go 3 at the back. He's going to look to use wing-backs. He probably is going to play 3 at the back, Konate, Upamecano and Orban. I think that would probably be my choice to start with anyway. And then in terms of the left wing back, I think it's Klosterman,
yeah, it's Klosterman
out there at the moment playing as a left wing back.
They sold Bernardo to Brighton like last summer, which I think was a mistake.
Klosterman's a good player.
Yeah, but what's happened to Bernardo at Brighton, man?
He's played about 1,000 minutes. His numbers look obscene. His numbers look amazing.
But is this just the case of Chris Hughton just not being aligned with his head of recruitment?
I think so, pretty much, because I don't really see anything in Bernardo's numbers and when I've watched him that suggests like a reason that he wouldn't. I mean, he's not very attacking, but that's not really his job. Like, he just has,
maybe he's a bad egg or something.
But he just has huge. Well, no, because he still played 1,000 minutes, which is like not so little that he's not like being kicked out of the squad.
Mm.
But like, yeah, he's just a lockdown defensive fullback. I mean, like, wins the ball between 5 and 6 times a game, never gets dribbled past, doesn't really dribble a lot himself, doesn't really create a lot himself, but you're just not getting around him.
But this is why, I'm throwing Sessegnon's name in the hat just because that's a Leipzig-style signing and it might cost them a little bit. But again, another statement, if he can go and compete with the Premier League size, the one is signature, which will be maybe a Tottenham Hotspur, and get Sessegnon.
Do you think those teams will still be on the table for Sessegnon? I'm not so convinced.
I do, yeah. I think Tottenham, who have no money to spend, know that Fulham are in a position where they need cash.
Why don't you think they'll be in for Sessegnon?
Just obviously, he's obviously so young, he's got massive potential, but
I don't think this season can black mark his name because he's barely played.
I'm not suggesting it should have, but I think he probably needs a bit more developing.
But he's had a good season.
I don't think he's been remarkable.
He's got 2 goals, 5 assists. He's maybe not like been as remarkable as an 18-year-old in the Prem.
He's not been as remarkable as people were expecting.
I mean,
that's
we were talking about him for one of the players to watch. But that's
I think he has been like that in a really bad side. I'm not saying you're going to put him in a side and like immediately.
Do you think he's ready for Spurs?
I don't think he's going to be a fullback. Is the issue?
No.
Like,
but this is why he might work as a left wing back.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
In a Nagelsmann,
and he can back up wing
like
as well.
A 3 with 2 wing backs, and then they've got obviously the very talented right back. His name's completely slipped my mind. They signed him in the summer. You mentioned him earlier.
Mukaleli.
Right back, isn't he?
I think he's played a bit as a left back. He's a centre back, really. Oh, hang on. Haven't they got Marcelo Ciracchi as well, who's a left
back?
Yes,
they have. Have they? No.
Yeah, they got him out of Argentina last summer, and he also looks amazing, like really good defensively and a really good crosser. So I think Ciracchi's going to be the first choice there because Klostermann's never quite nailed it. But Mukiele, I think, has played in both fullback
spots. From the research I was doing earlier, he'd predominantly got his game time this season at right back.
Okay, cool. Maybe I'm just mixing him up with someone else.
I'm guessing that's because they've got very decent strength in depth at centre half as well,
sure.
with Willy Orban, who I believe is club captain as well, can just slot in there. And then the midfield area looks really good. You know, you mentioned him already, Terry Adams coming in from New York
Terry
Red
Adams.
Bulls. Is that his name?
Tyler Adams.
Terry
Adams.
From the 80s,
Terry Adams.
I don't know why. You've interviews of Terry Tibbs. So.
Yeah, I literally don't know why I just said Terry.
Terry Tibbs.
The guy that you were talking about, you were listening to his positive interviews earlier.
Terry Crews. That's why, man.
Who's Terry Tibbs?
Do you know that's why? What? It's because I watched like 5 back-to-back Terry Crews interviews earlier, and now I'm calling him Terry. Well, now I've called him Terry Adams, and there's no
Terry
going
Adams.
Back. Tyler Adams, obviously, coming in from New York Red Bulls. I think he was only $3 million, you know.
He was like nothing.
It's just embarrassing.
Is he 20?
He's 20, yeah. And apparently the reason they were able to get him in so early was because it was part of the deal to bring Jesse Marsh into the assistant manager role at Leipzig. Although they are sister clubs, it's not always the easiest to convince people to sell.
Sure.
And obviously he started pretty well, 4.2 tackles and interceptions, 5 key passes, 9 deep progressions.
5 key passes?
0.5 key passes.
Right.
0.5
Have you looked at his dribbles as well?
I haven't looked at his dribbles.
Like I think he's been dribbling between 2 and 3 times a game and like very rarely failing.
That's crazy.
Like he's got really high success rates. So he looks like, I'm not saying he looks exactly like Naby Keita, but big defensive output and the ability to drive forward.
Yeah.
That suggests kind of the potential of being the all-round midfield package.
Well, I think a lot of Leipzig fans or Bundesliga fans would have thought that Haidara was the natural Keita replacement, right, as well. Obviously, some fairly big progression numbers and defensive numbers too. And they managed to get him in January, haven't they? So I'm reckoning he's going to have a hell of a season under Nagelsmann. The problem remains the Timo Werner replacement. Because even if you look at how Nagelsmann lines up with Hoffenheim, with those sort of 2 central midfielders that split wide and bounce balls off of the strikers, I think that's going to work quite well with Poulsen, the likes of Forsberg and Sabitzer and stuff.
Yeah, Poulsen's had a good season, hasn't he?
But that goal scorer is so key to this Leipzig side. So key, man.
Do you not see anyone stepping up? Like Augustin, when he plays, looks amazing. Bruma, when he plays, looks amazing. But then at the end of the season, I look at them and they're like, they have 9 goals and assists in like 800 minutes. But then the next season, they play another 800 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, and they never really get into the team.
I mean, would you be willing to say Poulsen's going to... I mean, Augustin's going to start as the Werner replacement?
I mean... Only if we were doing a big rebuild. Like if we basically said, look,
I don't think Nagelsmann's going to be willing to take that.
Look, our aim is to make Europa League places this year.
Yeah, but surely the aim of bringing Nagelsmann in is the competition with Bayern Munich. They've taken the manager Bayern wanted. They should go out and take the players that Bayern are also sniffing. And I think for me, the key areas that they should look to sign are potentially another central defensive backup if he is going to operate with a 3, because having just 3 names back there, obviously Mukaleli can fit in as well. But I think another central defensive option and a Timo Werner replacement, which should be a big name. They should just go out and go balls to the wall and go, fuck it, we're competing with Bayern this year. Here's £50 million for Luka Jovic. Give him to us.
I mean, that would be fun.
So that's awesome. So that is, I think Leipzig are in the best position to immediately challenge, but I know that you guys have some other names that you think maybe could, or some ways that other teams in the Bundesliga could challenge.
Yeah, I mean, my one is really a big rebuild in comparison to RB Leipzig. I'm going to cover Schalke, who have had an absolute car crash of a season, to be totally
That's
honest.
An understatement.
But prior to it, you know, they finished in the top four, three of the last six seasons. Last year, they finished second with 63 points, which is still 21 behind Bayern Munich.
They're also literally the most boring team in the world.
Yeah. I mean, they played ugly but effective
was
football.
Was it Tedesco? Was it under Tedesco then as well?
Last season, they played ugly but effective football. Yeah. This season, they played ugly, and terrible, ineffective and trash.
Could they go down?
100%. 100%. Nah, yeah, really? They are. I think it's 3 points between them and Stuttgart, who are in the playoffs.
God,
place.
Really?
Yeah.
It's down to three.
I think it's 3 points.
Wow. I'd love them to get relegated. They deserve it. They're a state.
Kieran's recording this podcast, just not happy.
Schalke, not so much anymore. But yeah, they were sixth as late as 10th of February last year, but 8 wins in their final 11 games saw them finish second. Which was their best finish since 2009-10.
That was mental.
It was Tedesco's first year in charge and also his first top division job. Pretty good effort.
Fucking hell, really?
Especially as it was a team in transition, like supposedly. He played a 3-4-1-2, and all the reports I read today were like he played very ugly football, but got them back into the Champions League for the first time since 2015. They were slightly fortunate. They scored 6.2 more goals than XG predicted.
And the rest of the league was shit.
Which was the fourth biggest differential in the division, which led to 11 more points than they should have. So they should have finished fourth, according to XG, behind Bayern, Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen. But they had an absolutely catastrophic start to this campaign. They lost their first 5 Bundesliga games, scoring 2 and conceding 9. Their sporting director was pretty much in tears. He was saying, I never saw this coming, what has gone on with this team? They then won.
The sporting director sat on his ass for years. They've done nothing.
Christian Heidel.
All he's done is let contracts run down. They lost Kolasinac on a free. They lost Goretzka on a free. And they lost Max Meyer on a free. I know, what are you doing, you lazy arsehole?
But in his exact quotes was, I couldn't have imagined this in my wildest dreams. But I mean, if he had a bit more foresight.
Mate, turn up to work once in a while. Yeah. And somebody will be like, all these fucking players are leaving, mate.
But they did have quite a good middle patch this season. They won 6 of their next 14 games. So they're up to 12th and everyone's like, maybe Schalke are back. But they haven't won a league game since the 25th of January.
Fucking hell.
How did Tedesco last so long?
And 6 losses.
Because he was
absolutely
in the Champions
mental.
League, man. It's because he was in the Champions League progressing.
They've lost their last 4 league games, conceding 12 goals in the process. They were beaten 10-2 on aggregate by Man City. They actually did okay in the first leg, even though they were pretty fortunate to come away with a 3-2 loss, which sounds quite weird, but Man City got 2 very lucky, sort of unfortunate penalties given against them. They then lost the second leg 7-0 at the Etihad.
That was one of the most embarrassing performances. I sat here, I said in the Champions League review the day after that they should be banned from European competition after that shit show.
I mean,
no team should concede 10 goals in a European round of 16 game and be allowed to compete for the next 5 years.
Well, did it every year for about 3 years in a row.
It was embarrassing. I remember watching the highlights in Bali and I was like, what has happened to this team? I mean, they weren't really even running by the end. Tedesco was fired 2 days later, and they appointed Huub Stevens, who I wasn't aware of, as interim manager.
H-U-U-B.
H-U-U-B. Yeah.
That was the previous Hoffenheim boss, previous to Nagelsmann.
Yeah, long time ago. Yeah.
Who actually left his role mid-season because he fell very ill.
Yes, exactly that. It's actually his third spell in charge of Schalke.
Always a good time.
Between 1996 and 2002, won a UEFA Cup and 2 DFB Pokals in that time.
Whoa,
finished as a runner-up. Then had a spell between September 2011 and December 2012 after Ralf Rangnick resigned, won 54% of his games and then was fired. Also managed PSV, Red Bull Salzburg, Stuttgart and most recently Hoffenheim, like Joe mentioned, although he resigned in February 2016 citing health reasons.
Yeah. There's something so depressing about Schalke.
But equally,
like there's something that I hear their name.
I agree, man.
I mean,
I think of Huntelaar. I think of Jefferson Farfan.
Mate, not disrespect Jefferson Farfan. He was a bloody FIFA legend.
I loved him. Farfan. God. Speedy.
Guido Bergstaller. I just hear these names and I'm like, oh, Christ.
Great pronunciation. I'm coming on to Bergstaller in a little
this,
bit.
More of this.
Like, Huub Stevens, I think I don't know whether he was irked or not, but they'd agreed to bring Nagelsmann in as the first team manager from
the
summer. That was the done deal. And instead, they bought it forward by 6 months when he was citing health reasons.
Okay.
So he was leaving anyway.
Right,
he was gone from Hoffenheim anyway because they were bringing in Nagelsmann.
And I think Bayern had already tried to poach Nagelsmann by that point for their reserve team.
Yes,
right?
They had.
So Hoffenheim were like, we better give this guy
Just give him the job.
So this guy now hasn't had a job for 3 years and he stepped into a Schalke situation, which is, as I said, pretty dire. They're 3 points above Stuttgart, who are in the relegation playoff space. And it's a sort of three-way battle for that playoff space. Augsburg are on 25 points, Schalke are on 23 points, and Stuttgart have 20. They might all potentially go down with Nuremberg and Hanover. And unlike Schalke, Stuttgart are in actually quite good form. Well, reasonable form, comparingly even. They've got 5 points from their last... Comparatively, that's the word. They've got 5 points from their last four games. Schalke have zero. So they are edging towards the drop.
Mate, Schalke, so how the hell are you going to rebuild this team from Bundesliga 2?
So I've got to explain...
Change the name, change the crest.
I've got to explain why it's sort of gone wrong. Yeah. And the main issues stem from last summer. It was pretty eventful. They obviously lost Leon Goretzka and Max Meyer. Goretzka in particular was pretty important. 24 years old, missed 10 games through injury, but was pretty vital when he played. They weren't a great attacking side, as we've already mentioned, 11.9 shots per game, 11th most in the division, but were quite efficient. They got the 6th most shots on target. Goretzka took 2 shots per 90. It was actually the 3rd best in the squad, which shows how dire their attacking areas were. It was Bergstaller who came in. Because he only came in the summer.
Really?
So there weren't a lot of goals last year. And there are even less this year.
But, you know, like Max Meyer, when he joined Palace, people were like, man, this is an unreal sign about Palace.
Yeah.
He's been
I'll get on to him in a minute. It's bad when you're not getting a job, a role over James McArthur.
Is he playing as an attacking mid again?
James McArthur's keeping him out of the team.
No, but what is he playing?
He's playing as a midfield too.
For a long, long time, he was an attacking mid, and he was... hideously overrated, and then he had one really good season as a DM under Tedesco. What is he now?
He actually, I think it was only really 6 months as a DM, and then he basically decided that he was going to be the star of Schalke and held them to rights over a contract. Wanted 8 million per year, they only wanted to give him 5. He was like, I'm off.
And Palace then went, I'll pay you 8.
Accused Christian Heidel of bullying him. And
this Christian Heidel guy is a fucking weapon. Get him out of the club.
Accused him of bullying him, and then was like, "Oh, don't worry, I'll have loads of suitors." AC Milan and Arsenal did look at him and were like, "No, that's fucking way too expensive."
Arsenal looked at him,
and now
like,
he's
nah.
at Crystal Palace.
El
and
Nelly.
I got down here. What's he started? 11 games with 12 appearances off the bench.
Yeah, but don't forget the
James
power.
McArthur in top.
Yeah, don't forget the power that Palace midfield keep him out there. Milivojevic.
Milivojevic.
Goal scorer.
Yeah, he's literally got like 20 goals over the last two seasons.
Milivojevic, yeah,
if he didn't take penalties, no one would know who he was.
I've never really rated James McArthur or Cech Kouyaté.
Oh, Jimmy, can you put some respect on Cech Kouyaté's name?
They signed Cech Kouyaté.
Put some respect on his name.
That was
you know when West Ham are getting rid of midfielders, you really shouldn't go.
West Ham got West Hammed. Normally the stupid club who comes and hoovers up all your shit is West Ham. Yeah, and Palace did it to them.
But the crucial thing about these two, Goretzka and Meyer, was actually in a pretty poor side. They did do a lot of defensive work. Goretzka put in 4.2 tackles and interceptions per 90. And he's actually been okay since he's gone to Bayern. Only Thiago's played more minutes out of midfielders. He's played the 7th most minutes in the squad. He's got 6 league goals. Only Lewandowski, James Rodriguez and Gnabry have scored more. And he's also provided 3 assists. He's probably not Bayern quality, but he's...
He went on a tear, didn't he?
Man, he had a really good goal scoring.
He's going to be a slap-bang squad player for Bayern. I mean, it
is
going
to be
nothing more.
This is what we said last summer, and everyone was fucking furious. They were all like, oh, Goretzka's amazing. To be fair to Goretzka, I kind of talked shit about him last year because I looked at his numbers and I was like, there's nothing that special here. But I do think when you play a really defensive style and you don't have like lights out attackers, I guess that third man runner from the midfield becomes a lot more important, kind of like Loftus-Cheek did for Palace last year. So I guess I can see how he'd be
but
useful
the trouble
for
is
a club
they're just
like
going to upgrade. They're going to upgrade. Bayern are going to upgrade.
Well, no, Tolisso's going to get fit.
Tolisso's going to be fit. You're going to have Thiago, Tolisso, and Goretzka's going to be on the bench.
And Rabiot.
Which is fine. That's probably where... I mean, his stats aren't actually too bad. He's taking 2.2 shots per 90. He's got an 87% pass accuracy. He's fine. He's got a
combined XG of an expected assist of 0.4. Thiago's is 0.3. Although they play in slightly different positions, and
gonna,
he's fine.
He's going to be a solid rotational option to play in the Pocao and against the Minnows.
Yeah, definitely. And so they've lost Goretzka and Maya, and then they lose Thilo Kehrer to PSG for £33 million.
Pounds. Is that a losing?
I think it is, because he played the fourth most minutes last year. He actually looked really good for Schalke. I know he's been quite inconsistent for
PSG.
He's
been good for PSG in a debut season for a 22-year-old.
I mean, he's not been
playing
too bad.
Out of position. He was playing as a centre-half for Schalke, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And now he's playing as a right-back for PSG.
Yeah, he's playing in a 3-4-1-2 as well. You know, totally different to what PSG
mate, against
playing.
Manchester United, he obviously, barring the horrible mistake that allowed Romelu Lukaku to tap in, he's been really good.
Yeah. And they also lost Naldo. I mean, I know he's 34 now, but he played every single minute of last year.
What? Hang on, what?
He was great for Schalke last year. I mean, it does show
Naldo.
Now, wasn't Naldo like their joint top scorer for a minute last season? Did he get like seven goals?
He chipped in a bit.
He's so big.
He's massive. And now he's at Monaco.
He is rubbish at Monaco.
But also,
he was a
serious Thierry Henry panic boy. We need to stay in the division. They got like him in. Who else did they get?
They got Fabregas through the door.
They got like a load of veterans.
It was like Ricardo Carvalho coming out of retirement.
They also got rid of Benedict Cowardes, who'd been at Schalke since 2007. Absolutely bled for
the club. At Lokomotiv.
He's now at Lokomotiv Moscow. For 4.5 million. He's still 31. I think they probably could have got another year out of Naldo and Cowardes. I'm not suggesting that they would have improved the situation massively, but these guys played really well for Schalke. I know Cowardes went on loan to Juventus last year, but he's actually been a great servant for Schalke.
Benedikt Cowardes is like, I only know Benedikt Cowardes is because on like every FIFA Ultimate Team ever, he's been like the cheap German centre-back.
Yeah. I think he played left-back in the World Cup.
He played left-back when they won the World Cup.
Utility player.
But no, didn't they say... Hang on, so they loaned him to Juve, but Juve had to buy him, right? Juve bought him and then sold him on to Lokomotiv.
But he only made about 4 appearances for Juve last
year. Yeah, but my point is they got like 17 mil or something, didn't they, for him?
I've got down here that they got 4.5 million.
What, from Lokomotiv?
Yeah.
So what you're,
it must
so
have been a portion
what actually
of
happened
the
is they loaned
fee.
Him to Juve, he came back and then they sold him to Lokomotiv.
Yes. This is what I've got here.
Bloody hell.
Good dealings. It's that sporting director again.
It's Christian Idol.
Honestly.
So all in all, they brought in 41 million in transfers. Not that much, considering the depth of talent.
Literally
they lost.
Nothing, given they've lost Goretzka and Maya
free. They spent 55 million on 8 different players. So it was quite worrying when you bring in 8 different players and spend 55 million. Sebastian Rudy and Mark Uth were the major arrivals, which I'll come on to.
Seb Rudy's not the worst signing, you know. Seb Rudy was super effective on the
Nuggets. He has played badly this year, though, lads. Wait until I get onto that. Okay, and then other signings, they've got a series of like under 22-year-olds, all costing between 2 million and 9.5. None of them played over 620 minutes.
They've also always got, like, Schalke always have a kid in their academy who they're like, he scored 50 goals in 20 games at youth level. It was Donis Avdiyi. Like, he's still
remember Donis.
He's on loan somewhere. He's a Schalke kid.
And before that was Leroy.
Yeah, there's always one of these kids, and like literally 1 in 10 of them is actually good.
They've got Katuchu this year.
How much did they get for Leroy Sane?
40, I think.
Yeah, they got like 37.
Quite a lot.
They got like 37. At the time, that was a lot.
So I get on to what does Schalke need, and you can guess from the situation that it's quite a lot, really. An entire new club wouldn't go amiss, but they've actually started restructuring already. So they brought a new head of sports. I don't know why they call him that, but Jochen Schneider, who was at RB Leipzig beforehand, and Ralf Rangnick was apparently pretty surprised that he left, but apparently he's an ardent Schalke fan, and for quote from Rangnick, when you get a chance like that, you can't deny that. One of his first moves was to get rid of Tedesco. And bring in Hoop Stevens.
Oh, so he's a very recent appointment.
Yeah. This is at the start of March.
Okay.
So it's all sort of going on.
Tedesco probably did need to move on.
Probably.
Like, I'm not saying he won't. I think he'll probably be a good coach at some point because clearly he thinks about it. But it's really hard for him to get some time, some downtime to think about what needs to be done when he's fighting a relegation battle.
Yeah, like, exactly. On the other hand, competing in the Champions League.
Hoop Stevens, is he the best?
He's definitely a stopgap, though. How long's the contract for Hoop?
That's to the end of the year.
Yeah, so and he's the stopgap.
I'll start with the manager that I'm suggesting they get in.
Yeah.
And it's a guy who obviously became recently unemployed, but up until then, we were probably talking about as one of the managers of the season in his own country. Pablo Machin is available. And I think that'd be a really interesting signing for Schalke.
I like that.
He's got a lot. He'll have a lot of suitors this summer, but he did have a disastrous spell at Sevilla in his last 7 games. I think they only won one.
They got very unlucky.
They did get very unlucky. But up until then, they were playing a great brand of football. I think they were third in early February.
The forwards were scoring every touch.
Yeah, I mean, Wissam Ben Yedder has never not scored.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Andre Silva. You know it's really elite when Andre Silva's scoring goals.
I mean, they were scoring a lot. They were conceding a lot as well, but it was really entertaining. I really like Pablo Machin. I think he'd be great for this rebuild. But also, we need to clear up some funds. I'm saying Sebastian Rudy, out. He got sold to them by Bayern Munich for 14.4 million. Made 35 appearances for them last year. Listen to his stats this year. He's only started 13 league games, 0.4 shots, 0.4 dribbles, 0.7 key passes per 90, 3 tackles and interceptions, which is 0.9 fewer than Goretzka and 1.9 fewer than Meyer managed. And this is for a side that are not seeing a lot of the ball, that are not playing particularly well, and he's playing as the central fulcrum of that
side. But is this because, as a unit, they're so poor? Because we've seen Sebastian Rudy be a consistently strong performer for clubs in the past. Yeah. He might not have done it at Bayern, but he was competing for the same role as Thiago and Talisa.
Yeah, you don't expect shots, key passes, or dribbles for him. But I'd expect like solid defensive.
Yeah, worryingly low, a worrying drop off. But I would personally lay that more at the feet of Tedesco in terms of the role that Rudy's been playing. I don't know what it is because even pre Bayern, he was consistently great.
He was also. I was also looking around the squad, and he was one of the only sellable assets, really, at the moment in terms of like creating any money. He's 29.
I thought 24.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, you're not playing that well. We can get 15 million for you.
You'd rather keep like Bentaleb.
Yeah, exactly. And your teammates are not great at the moment either.
Though is Bentaleb a shithead?
Bentaleb's okay.
It feels like whenever I hear a story about Bentaleb, they're like, Bentaleb's not playing because he's been a dick. Mm. Like, Bentaleb's not playing because he's asked for more money.
Kieran's rapidly nodding his head that Bentaleb is not particularly great.
I mean, I haven't come across that in my research. Yeah. He may well be a dick.
Also, when did Nastasic stop being amazing and start being shit?
He's not having a good year, but he's still just 25, and I'm keeping him.
Yeah. How old was Nastasic when he went to see? Like 2020?
He was a baby.
I think maybe even younger.
But they were like, he's going to be one of the best centre back in Europe, and he was an absolute FIFA stormer, man.
Yeah, he was.
I'm also getting rid of Konor Palanka. I probably butchered that. He's 29. He's Ukrainian. He used to play for Sevilla.
I always used to get him and the other winger that joined Yarmolenko.
He's quite like Yarmolenko. There's nothing particularly
Yarmolenko is
better
than Konor Palanka.
Yeah, I mean, 2 goal contributions in 17 games this year, valued at 4 million. See you later.
He's just a Ukrainian Jefferson Farfan, man.
Yes. Farfan.
Yes, he is.
Can you put some respect on Farfan's
Jefferson
name?
Farfan. He sounds like the thing that Farfetch'd evolves into.
Where was Farfan from? Was it Peru?
Yeah, he was.
The Paddington Bear of Bundesliga football. Put some respect on the Paddy Bears.
He's Nobby Solano's great successor. And then I'm also getting rid of Jeffrey Bruma. You might remember him.
Jeffrey Bruma's still about.
He's not still there.
He's Schalke's fourth choice centre back.
Didn't he go to like Turkey or something? He was at PSV, right?
Yeah, he's been around the place. And he actually played quite well in Holland.
Is this the ex-Chelsea boy?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a Chelsea in like 1984? Like, how is he still playing
Jeffrey
football?
Jeffrey Bruma's been 27. For about 15 years.
But weirdly,
he's 27.
He's 27.
Is he?
Yeah, Chelsea, Leicester, Hamburg Academy side, PSV, Wolfsburg, and now Schalke.
Yeah, and he's not getting
25 caps for the Netherlands. That was a dark time.
He's not getting a look in at Schalke at the moment. If you can't get a look in this team, then you're really struggling.
Stay to that.
Weirdly, despite conceding 44 goals in 26 games, which is only topped by 5 teams, I actually think it's their defence that needs the least work at Schalke. Their keeper, Ralf Farman, he's 30. He's been there since 2011-12. Had a few injuries this year, but he's actually not been bad when he's played. I'm keeping him. I'd actually make him captain because there's a real lack of leaders in this team.
Who are you making captain?
Ralf Farman.
The keeper.
Yeah, 3.6 saves per 90. No great issue. He's doing fine. Left back, they've got a 30-year-old called Bastian Oxypacka.
Farman's been properly demoted to second choice now.
Yes, and I saw they've got this new guy, but he's only about 20, and I was a bit concerned about that. Kieran's saying that Farman's been demoted. Was he a bit of a douche?
No, I think they just, as a club, decided it was time to...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, me and Christian Heidel have very different attitudes towards his potential future. Anyway, left back, I'm keeping Bastian Oczepka.
Yeah, he's good.
He's good. Yeah,
he's great.
One goal, four assists. Joint most assists in the squad, along with Weston McKennie.
He had an amazing season the year before he joined them. He went to them for like a pittance.
Yeah.
And there was a point where he was mooted for a move to like a top six Premier League club.
Weston's picked up a serious injury though.
Good. He has. Yeah. I'm not actually starting him. He's on my bench.
Yeah. Is he actually good?
Weston McKennie.
Yeah, is he good?
Not particularly.
Okay.
But he's only 20.
Because the problem is I hear a lot about him because obviously like he's American. Yeah. You hear a lot about American players, but I have no understanding
at the moment.
He's gonna
he doesn't look great, but he plays in a variety of positions.
He's like 21
he's
as well.
Very, he's 20.
Okay.
But Oczepka.
I think it's like a CZ, right? So it's like a Oczepka. Yeah.
Okay, I'll call him Bastian. He's just come back from groin surgery. And his stats look really good. 3 tackles and interceptions, 1.3 dribbles, 2.6 key passes per 90 from left back.
Lethal.
I'm keeping him.
It's pretty decent.
Barry Douglas numbers, mate.
Yeah, centre-backs, I'm keeping Salif Sane. He's played the most minutes in the entire squad. He came in last summer from Hanover. He actually looks like quite a good prospect. 4.2 tackles and interceptions, 4.3 aerial duels, 1 per 90, 78% of he wins his challenges in the air. Arguably their only successful signing of last summer, and I'm going to pair him with Nastasic, 25, former City man, solid season, left and right footed.
How do they set up at the moment? Is it a 4 and then like?
To be honest, I don't know what Hoop Stevens has done, but under Tedesco it was 3-4-1-2.
3-4-1-2. It feels like they just like stick two DMs in. Get Rudy alongside Bentaleb and just shore up the back line.
And just shithouse. Shithouse as much as possible.
And it's just not shithousing well enough at the moment. Anyway.
They just need one attacker though.
Yeah.
Like the thing is with clubs like this, I often feel one attacker can genuinely...
It's so hard to find this one attacker.
Yeah, I know, but they can turn you into like a mid-table club having that one guy basically. Yeah. Like you look at other clubs in the league and you kind of think...
Yeah, Luka Jovic.
Yeah, they've got one or two guys. Like, well, I mean, in fairness, Rebic has also had a good season.
Yeah, he has.
And Haller's had a good season.
Haller's had an incredible season.
But you look around and you're kind of like, okay, maybe that one guy or... In the case of Hoffenheim, that one coach can just like make a difference.
Yeah, and I'm also happy with their right back. He's called Cagliuri. He's 31. He can play at right mid on the right midfield, not as a right winger.
Joint top scorer this season.
Joint top scorer.
Shut up.
Yeah, 4 goals, 2 assists. No one's got more than 4 goals in the
league. You know, no one at the club has more than like 4.5 XG cumulative over the course of the season.
Mate,
you know, if Willy Orban was at their club, he would have the highest XG in the squad this season.
That's the likely centre-back.
And he'd be joint top scorer.
I mean, it's pretty depressing.
So what are your suggestions for the fixes?
Okay, so I'm keeping Cagliuri, great player, 5.1 tackles and interceptions, 31, so he doesn't have that long. I'm keeping Bentaleb in midfield. He's their top scorer in all competitions with 8. But I'm keeping him. But
yikes.
To go down alongside him, protecting this quite old defence, except for Nastasic, I'm going to sign someone with massive defensive output.
So you've sold Rudy.
Rudy.
This is the Rudy replacement.
So this is the Rudy replacement.
Rudy's gone.
I'm going for picking off some of the scraps of if Stuttgart go down, and I'm going to sign Santiago Ascacibar.
Yeah, he's got 22. Outrageous defensive numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is
they've actually got a great squad. I don't know how Stuttgart sign really well, I think, but they must just not be coached well because they also got Pablo Maffeo in from City. And he looks like a really, really good player. Like they actually make some really interesting signings, but they're still shit.
Yeah. No, Ascacibar, I've got it there.
Mate.
Joined from Estudiantes at the start at Santiago, Santi. Joined from Estudiantes at the start of last season. He's only missed one game, 4.6 tackles and interceptions. Doesn't look great on the ball, but he's only valued at €15 million. I think it'll be even less if Stuttgart go down.
What's Schalke's budget like?
I don't think it's a lot. They only spent €10 million net last summer. I'm not really quite sure why, because they've got a massive stadium. The Veltins Arena is pretty huge. Financially, they don't look in a...
And
they do have, like, literally no assets.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And there's not that many people ready to sell either. So I'm just hoping someone's going to dip into their pocket.
They've got to do something.
Yeah.
If they narrowly miss relegation, they're going to have to spend.
Okay, so you've bought in Santi.
£15 million, yeah. Forward line, right winger, I'm keeping Breel and Bolo's 22-year-old, and Katuchu, 19-year-old. Mbolo is actually their joint top scorer as well with 4 league goals.
He actually
looks quite useful. 0.6
he hasn't progressed as much as people were expecting him to since he's left Barcelona.
We sat out that whole season, right? Didn't he, with a knee injury? Did you say 0.6 expected goals a game?
Expected goals and assists.
How many minutes?
Not quite sure. Quite a lot, though.
Okay.
2.2 shots, 1.8 dribbles, 1.3 key passes at 22. I think he's one to watch.
But yeah, I mean, when he left,
he could be your guy.
Yeah, but when he left Bale, it was like, this guy is going to be a star.
But I think if he hadn't done his knee, and to be honest, if he'd gone to a better club, like, I think he would be a star. Like, it's really difficult to do that kind of, like...
Why did he end up going to Schalke? It's such a weird...
I think they just offered him minutes. But it's like, it's weird to do the counterfactual history on players like that, where you're kind of like, what would it be like if they'd got this coach and this number of minutes and they
hadn't
had this
injury?
Because
he was linked to some big teams, Bruno Bernard, pre-exit from Bar.
I actually don't remember hearing a lot about him back in the day, but yeah, I'll take
it. He was one of those kids that people know because of like FIFA and stuff. Right. But he was genuinely...
He was a football manager weapon.
Really?
Yeah, and he played in the Champions League by that point, I think, for Basel as well.
Fair. And he's swapping out on the right with their other new hero, Ahmed Katuchu, who Kieran loves. The Katuchu train, is what he calls him.
Katuchu.
19 years old, he's made 10 appearances, 2 goals, 3.1 shots, 2.3 dribbles, 0.6 key passes per 90. Although these stats are all slightly skewed by the fact, you know, most of these appearances are off the bench against tired legs.
I miss most of that, to be honest, Diggs. What, how many shots? How many?
3.1 shots, 2.3 dribbles, 0.6 key passes.
Ooh.
Normally playing as a striker.
But
I'm going to play him on the right occasionally. Just while he finds his feet.
Those are great dribble numbers for a forward.
Really good. But as I say, he's mainly coming on at like the 80th minute against Tard.
Is meant to be like the hope of Schalke, though, isn't he? That's the label he's been given.
But we need a big number 10. And I'm suggesting Schalke signed 25-year-old Italian international Vincenzo Grifo, who is German-born but Italian, played his entire career in Germany. He's actually signed for Hoffenheim last summer on a 4-year deal. But only played 333 minutes, and then he was loaned to Freiburg in January for the end of the season. Since then, he's made 8 Bundesliga appearances, all starts. I know this is a small, you know, catchment size, but 3 goals, 3 assists, 3 shots, 1.6 dribbles, 2.8 key passes, as well as 1.7 tackles and interceptions. Can also play on the left wing too. And he played, I mean, his numbers for Hoffenheim look great as well, but he just didn't get many minutes. 0.5 expected goals and assists per 90, only valued at 4.8 million euros.
You can pick up that. I like absolute that
suggestion. Bargain. If Hoffenheim were willing to sell, he's 25.
Ooh, Grifo. I thought he was older than that.
I like that suggestion. Yeah. I like that suggestion a lot because I don't think they can go out and compete with a.
I mean, to clarify, we were talking about building a side to win the Bundesliga. I'm not really. I'm just thinking of having to get Schalke back to normality.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Like, you get them back to, like, kind of compete for Europa League.
Fourth, fifth,
in a couple
sixth.
Of years. Then you get them to make signings.
I think some of these
Champions
signings
League.
Would potentially
that's how
be
you
quite
do
interesting.
It. Yeah,
they
exactly.
are a big-name club. If they had a bit of a sleeping giant, Schalke.
If they had, like, a Zork come along, you know, like at Dortmund. Yeah. If they had their equivalent come along... There's absolutely no reason for them not to get to that level. Like, they have all the resources. They're a really well-supported club.
I think you guys will like my suggestion for left-winger as well. He's had a lot of press this year. He's 21-year-old, plays for Gangomp, Marcus Thuram.
Motherfucker, I've got Marcus
Thuram.
Have
you? How a Schalke game at Marcus Thuram?
He's not actually valued that highly the moment.
I think he's going to be like a 40 million euro sale.
I don't. I think he'll be 20-25, but I think he's going to go to Milan or Arsenal.
Do you reckon? I mean, if they go in for him, fair enough.
His dribble numbers are outrageous.
Yeah, he's going for a couple of that dribbles per 90.
And he's also on the team which... Gangomp are 18th in Ligue 1, despite having the worst defence and the worst attack. I'm not sure how that's possible. But they've scored 19 goals in the league, and he's responsible for 8 of them, and his XG is even better. And he's doing that on the worst side in the league by far.
Yeah, I think he scored 7-1 assists. So
and his dribble numbers are
of his goals.
Fucking outrageous. But you know, like 3.8 a game, something like that.
I genuinely Ben Arthur, Neymar, Saint-Maximin and Youssef Atal of players who have played at least 500
right back
minutes.
Youssef Atal. Yusuf
I genuinely more. Think that there is a premium on Marcus Thuram because of who his dad is. I'm not like...
He's also filth. He's also good.
Fantastic, yeah. No, undoubtedly a good prospect, but that's what it is. It's like the press around him. It's like it's the hype train because his dad was Lilian Thuram.
To be fair, I would sign someone if it meant that Lilian Thuram would come to games at my club. Like,
cool guy.
For instance, if Marcel Desailly like, had a kid, I would sign that kid in the womb.
But do you not think like
Marcel
that?
Desailly's
I think that adds
ever.
Like 5 to 10 million. Like, if Enzo Zidane was like on the market, that just because he's a Zidane, it adds money.
What, like Giovanni Simeone?
It just fucking does.
But unlike Enzo Zidane, this guy actually looks worth it. I mean, he looks really, really promising.
Yeah, he does. I've heard
What about Florentin Pogba? Didn't he just go to MLS?
Yeah, but the trouble is, he doesn't have a legendary dad. He's just got a very good brother.
But what if you have a legend? It's annoying when you have a legendary dad, but you don't share the surname. You know, like the Ayew sons and Abedi Pele. Though, you know, he had Pele on the back of his shirt, but no one knows that they're his sons.
Yeah, but it's different.
You reckon that it Jordan Ayew would be at Barcelona if he had?
It's like you know that Maldini's son. Like, have you seen the hype around Maldini's son playing? Like, he's played like less than 300 minutes.
Yeah, but
like,
Maldini was the son of a guy who'd also been the captain of AC, right?
And
like
manager.
Cesare Maldini.
But the hype around this young lad, because he's got the surname Maldini, this is going to be the same with Marcus Thuram. I'm telling you.
I think he'll be 25.
Maybe. I think a lot of people forget Lilian Thuram. No. I think people forget how amazing he was.
He's going to be like a headline player.
Marcus Thuram's going to be a star, and I have heard information. Inside information that Milan are looking at.
Really?
Yes.
So probably out of Schalke's reach, annoyingly. But well, I do have an alternative.
Because they'll spunk a load more money.
I do have an alternative. Because I was a bit concerned that this team that I'm building is pretty young. I mean,
might as well go for
24.
Thuram, give him a go.
Yeah, Skasibar's 22, Mbolo's 22, Katucho 19, possibly Thuram 22. So I went for a more experienced option, which is 27-year-old Deportivo Alaves winger, Johnny. Who's playing really, really well Alaves. I mean, I've got to admit, I hadn't really heard of him before this year. He was at Malaga. But he's really playing well for Deportivo Alaves, who are arguably alongside Getafe, the surprise packages in Europe this year, really. He scored 4 and assisted 9 in 26 La Liga games. Only Messi has provided more assists. 1.4 shots, 1.9 dribbles, 2.7 key passes per 90, which is 4th in La Liga.
Damn.
0.5 expected goals plus assists per 90. He's only valued at €4.8 million and has a contract running out in 2020. So this is another bargain that I've managed to find. I honestly spent the morning wheeler-dealing my way around Europe.
I don't tell that to Harry Redknapp.
Yeah, true. And then finally, I realise I've been talking for ages now, but I think we need another striker at Schalke. As well. I mean, they've got Marcus and they've got Bergstaller as well, who are both useful strikers, but I want someone who can score goals.
Someone who's good
at
being a striker.
I don't know really, to be honest, what's happened with Marcus. He's had a few injuries, and Bergstaller played really well last year, but neither of them have played well this year. So I'm going for a new person to come in. And that man, in my opinion, should be 26-year-old Dutch striker Wout Voghest.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know, am I pronounced his name right? As resident Dutchman?
It'd be Fout, I think.
Fout
Weghorst.
He's playing at Wolfsburg. 6'6". Only signed for Wolfsburg last summer, which could be a potential stumbling block, after scoring 69 goals in 159 games in 4 years in Holland. Since signing for them for $10.5 million, he scored 12 and assisted 5 in 26 Bundesliga games, not missing a single game. 18-19 stats look like this. 2.3 shots per 90, which isn't great, but 1.9 of them are inside the box. 1.3 key passes as well. He scored bang on what his XG predicts. His combined XG and his combined expected goals and assists is 0.7. His XG is 0.51, which is only 0.8 less than Timo Werner. He's valued at €24 million. Contract running until 2022, so he won't necessarily come cheap. But I think it'd be a great signing.
Do you know, I had another. I had another suggestion for Schalke signing up front. I think like a club like Schalke should take. I think somebody at that sort of level should take a punt on Luke De Jong again.
I feel like that
Newcastle spell like blighted his record so like badly, and his goal scoring record consistently in the Eredivisie has been brilliant. I think he's top goal scorer again this season. In and around
there. I think
he's
right up there. Yeah.
With Dusan Tadic.
Yeah, and
maybe.
Lozano's doing pretty well.
But,
well.
Like, I believe that one bad 12 months at Newcastle has, like, ruined his career reputation.
Yeah.
Like, nobody will even take a punt on him now. He's stuck at PSV.
Yeah. I did consider that for a while, but I like the look of this Weghorst guy. So I've recreated the midfield. I've brought in Escasibar. I brought in Grifo, looks like an absolute steal. Johnny or Thuram on the left, and Bolo playing on the right, and Weghorst up top. I've done all that for $75 million, and I'm pretty pleased with myself. And this team is getting back in the Europa League, maybe, in my opinion.
Okay, so not quite challenging.
Not quite
but
challenging.
A potential future
but
challenger.
Considering where they are, this is good.
So we've had an immediate challenger, a potential future challenger, What are you bringing to the table?
A medium-term one. I've got Bayer Leverkusen. Are having a bit of a mixed bag this season. They're currently in sixth. They're 5 points off the UCL places with 8 games left. So it's possible they get Champions League football. Finished fifth last season. And they only missed out on Champions League this year to Dortmund on goal difference. Mm. So it could have been a very different year for them. But they changed manager in December after a pretty poor start to the season. Heiko Herrlich was in there before. And I don't know, like they pretty much rode Leon Bailey to success last season. And yeah. He fell off a little bit at the beginning of this year. And they didn't really seem to have a method for counteracting that. I think they just hoped that he would have the talent to get past defenders, even once those defenders realised he was the danger man.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Kai Havertz has gone pretty much supernova this season, double figures from midfield. And Kevin Folland continues to be a very decent, if slightly unspectacular, forward. So when you look at their expected goals per game last season in attack, 1.7, this season in attack, 1.7. But last season in defence, 1.1 against, this season, 1.4. So that tells you the story. The decline is mostly defensive, I think. And you can see that because they're still third for shots per game in the Bundesliga. They're fourth for shots on target. Now, that's getting fixed a little bit because since Petr Bosz came in,
they've passed teams to death.
They've taken 18 points, which is the third best in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
They rank third for XG, third for XG against.
Well, you know, on paper, though, that Petr Bosz hire is quite smart because defensively is the issue, maybe. And if there's one thing Petr Bosz sides do is they keep the fucking ball.
Yeah.
And that is one way to defend.
And you just run with the throttle open, you know? Like, you've got Bellarabi back from injury. You've got Folland. You've got Brandt. You've got Havertz. You've got Bailey.
Yeah.
You've actually got a really decent attack.
I watched, saw one pass map of a recent Bayer Leverkusen game under Petr Bosz. And I think there were 5 players over 100 passes.
Jeez.
In fact, there was one centre half, I believe, had 190 passes.
Well, Dragovic has played a lot of passes for them. Like, Dragovic is hitting like 7 long balls a game, which is pretty filthy, really. But yeah, when you look at their personnel, like, there's something to work with. I'm not sure Petr Bosz is going to get them back to like competing for the title, but I think he's going to get them into the Champions League places because he's a good coach. But I think he's a little bit naive when he comes up against the really good coaches.
Definitely,
that's fine. That's fine.
Though
that
I remember his Ajax side versus Jose final of the Europa League, and it was really like naivety versus pragmatism.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. Like, I remember reading afterwards, like, Marcotti was talking about it, and he was like, has this guy never seen a Mourinho side play? They were just so naive. It was really strange. But anyway, like, in that run of games where they have ranked third in the Bundesliga for expected goals, expected assists, and points, they face Bayern, Dortmund, Wolfsburg and Mönchengladbach.
Wow.
Who are all in the top six. So that's pretty good. And I think that the good thing about Bosz is because he plays such an attacking style of football, he's really starting to maximise the value from those attackers again. So Leon Bailey's expected goals and expected assists per 90 this season is 0.44. But if you just look at the time he's played under Bosz, it's 0.6. Folland is at 1.00. Bellarabi is at 0.87. Brandt is at 0.8. Kai Havertz in midfield is at 0.5.
So where do you rank? Obviously, like, for me, Leon Bailey at one stage last season was like the must-have kid in Europe.
Yeah,
alongside like Ousmane Dembele.
I think that probably if they carry on like this by the end of the season, he'll be back to expected goals and assists per 90 of like over 0.5. At that point, you've got a kid who's done that over 2 years, who's still 21. I would still pay pretty big money for Leon Bailey in the summer. Like, I mean, yes, he hasn't had the same number of goals and assists, but generally speaking, like, all the underlying numbers are there. And I think this year it was just a downturn under Herrlich, which kind of saw the numbers drop off.
There are a lot of... I actually read a lot of reports recently of Bayern Munich being quite interested in Leon Bailey in terms of a right winger who can cut inside on that left foot. I would be wary if I was Bayern Munich.
And he can play on both sides.
But I'd be wary if I was Bayern Munich, just directly trying to replace Robben, because that is not going to happen. Mm. And we've seen over and over teams try and get a like-for-like replacement.
Sure.
But I think Leon Bailey...
Well, they want Nicolas Pepe, like, as well.
Is part of your plan to keep or to sell him?
Definitely to keep him. I keep all the good players I can. I've actually not really made a plan to sell anyone in particular.
Okay.
Like, because I think that the squad needs some additions, but I wouldn't say that there are... that there are people who are just like who are going to turn you enough money that I chuck them out the door.
I think a lot of clubs are going to be interested in Leon Bailey in the summer.
I think a lot of clubs are looking at Brandt as well.
I think
Brandt's been really
I've
good.
Also read Manchester United linked a lot to Leon Bailey needing a right winger.
Well, Arsenal were linked to him before. I mean, the one good thing is that you hope that this down year means that you get another year of him.
Yeah.
And Bellarabi's getting on now, but the rest of the team's pretty young. You know, like Bailey's 21, Brandt's 22, Follin's 26, Havertz is 19.
Havertz, wow.
So you've got a lot of quality there. I would add some youth. So that was the reason I looked at Marcus Thuram as well. I think that getting in another attacker, especially one who plays wide but can be a centre forward in the long term, which I think is probably what Thuram will end up as, I think that's quite a wise move for them. Like, Folland is good, but last season got 14 goals. This season, I think he's got 11. So he probably hit about the same number as last season. And that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And to be fair, goal scoring is not an issue. I think there are 19 sides in Europe's top five leagues who have scored more goals than them. So they're actually one of the better attackers.
So you're not looking for a striker, really?
They pretty much scored as many goals as Real Madrid this season. I think they're two off or something.
Are you looking for a striker as part of your setup?
No, so that was Marcus Thuram. Marcus Thuram, I think, I start by playing him in a wide zone because Bellarabi's always going to be injured. And then in the long term, I'd probably move him into the
centre forward. A player that I was looking at for Leipzig was Keita Balde. Mm-hmm. I feel like his career is just stalling. And
he went through a middle patch around November where he got quite a few games, quite a few
but
goals.
But now,
he's
really struggling now.
Lautaro Martinez back.
So where is he now?
He's at Inter.
Oh, yeah,
he's behind Icardi in the pecking order and Lautaro Martinez.
And Yon Karamo will come back from Bordeaux.
He's sort of like third/fourth in the pecking order. And we saw that he can be a handful. So I think you might be able to get him out of Inter Milan for a fairly decent fee this summer if they try and keep Icardi.
Well, I think there's some redundancy at Inter. So if they decide to keep him, you can probably try and get Karamo off him because they sent him back to France on loan this season, weren't convinced. His numbers look great. Looks like a really, really useful young player. I'd have a think about him.
Yeah.
I think generally you've just got to go around the kind of...
But you're looking for that forward that can play wide and as a centre forward.
I think ideally, just because I don't want to just drop Volland to the bench, like the attack is working with Volland in the side. However, Brandt, I like Brandt. Brandt's a really good creator, but he is like, by this point, he was meant to be a superstar,
yes.
I feel.
100% agree.
And I still think he's always going to be limited a little bit by his lack of pace. Like, he's not particularly fast. He's skillful, as in like technically skillful, but he's not really a dribbler.
And he's big. I remember when I went to the Allianz to watch Bayern versus Leverkusen, like Julian Brandt stood out like a sore thumb, man. It's like a sort of in that role. He's a unit. He like carries, like you're completely right. He's got no burst or that sort of intricate sort of style. He is a unit in there, yeah. And I think that goes slightly under the radar.
Yeah, well, I think... I don't know. Yeah, I think we need at least one attacker because we're probably going to lose a star at some point. But generally speaking, like somebody who can come in and do a job, and I think Thuram's probably that guy. If you can't get him, yeah, I start looking for bargains in France and Italy. Defense. First choice lineup has been something like Wendell, Tah, Bender, Weiser.
Tah's been around and linked to every top club consistently for 4 years.
How old do you think Tah is?
Well,
22.
26 now, maybe?
He's 22.
What? That's crazy. Because
yeah.
I remember when he first broke on. He must have been like 18 then when he first broke on. Because when he first broke through like 3 years ago, he was getting linked to fucking everybody. And nobody would shut up about him.
Yeah, so I think to be fair, Tah is still like a really good prospect. I think Tah's a good centre-back. He's played the most minutes in the squad this season, I think. And Wendell as well. Bender is still a converted player. They've got both Benders there now, by the way. And there have been significant minutes for Tin Yedvai, who's like a young defender who's played on both sides this season and at centre back. But and Dragovic as well, who is another guy.
I don't know a lot about Dragovic.
He was another guy who's meant to have a great career and just like never really worked.
Where did he come from? He was linked to Manchester United Basel. Loads of times.
He came Dragovic. From Basel and then he played somewhere else in the Prem.
Okay. Did he go to Leicester?
Yeah,
I think he did go to Leicester. It's not the worst.
I was
going to
guess like Stoke or something, but yeah, I think it is Leicester.
Because he went there in that season when they had the big Polish centre half as well,
Leicester,
didn't they?
Leicester let go of some good talent actually as well. Kramaric.
Oh my god, the big
he was
Polish
on loan at Leicester. He made 11 appearances.
Vasilevsky was the big Polish.
Vasilevsky,
he gave
like
away the free kick that Arsenal then scored from. when we won 2-1, it looked like we were going to win.
He was the party animal, though. I remember from all the shots when they won the league, he was loving it.
He's a unit. Yeah. He's an absolute unit. But yeah, Vendor, I still think, looks like one of the best defensive fullbacks in the league. He's 25 now, which is a bit sad. I thought he'd move on. But 4.5 tackles and interceptions game, completes nearly 80% of his tackles. On the other side, Visor's a bit more attacking. So you still see him getting about 4 tackles and interceptions a game, but he's putting up 1.2 key passes and 1.2 dribbles, so he's 5th in the squad for both of those. So he is actually a bit of an attacking outlet, whereas I kind of looked at him and I was just like, you know, it's the classic thing where you look around the squad and you see a name you don't know and you're like, can probably upgrade. And then I looked into him and I was like, you're right. I think we need some depth, though. When Yedvai is kind of backing us up at right fullback and at left fullback and at centre back, then I start thinking, when we've got both Bender brothers, I start to think, we have some issues here. Yeah, Tar pretty good. Dragovic, 7 successful long balls a game from 10 attempts, which is pretty outrageous. I also think in midfield, we need a real defensive presence next to Havertz. Havertz is so attacking. Aaron Gies is 29. He's injured all the time. Baumgartling is still there.
How do they keep hold of Kai Havertz? They're just not going to be able to.
You're going to lose him at some point, but I reckon you can get another year out of him. Like, somebody's got to come in and pay an absolute fortune. And we normally have started hearing about that by now. Unless Bayern...
Wasn't there talk of Arsenal, though, like a month ago? Or maybe it was just paper chat.
But it's not Jadon Sancho levels of chat.
To a place like Ramsey, like, maybe. But, like, I just think they've got more... Arsenal have more pressing areas of concern. Nobody who's been linked with him has... He's not got the same, like, press as, like, an Aouar out of Lyon. You know, like...
Or a Tanguy and Ndombele.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, like, you do... It's a good rule of thumb. Like, you do tend to start seeing that with the, particularly with the clubs outside a country. So if the Premier League clubs were going to take a serious interest in Havertz and offer big money, I think we'd have started to hear about.
Yeah,
it
you'd
now.
Have. Like, I think I actually kind of agree with that. I think the only time I saw him really quite linked was with Chelsea, and with the ban. I thought he'd have been quite a nice fit in that more attacking role, you know, where Ross Barkley and Kovacic are operating.
I actually think he'd probably be perfect. He'd be your ideal signing there.
Obviously not Gladman now.
What can he do? But you look around the rest of their squad and you just think, like, there are a bunch of guys who are just like, I looked at their midfield and I was like, who has been playing in this midfield? Because nobody's got many minutes and they've just been chopping and changing. Like, Aaron Gies gets injured all the time. He's got more minutes than Baumgartlinger and Kaur, but both of them have got under 1,000 minutes. So it was kind of like, we need somebody there who's going to play every game next to Havertz and basically give us that defensive presence.
Yeah.
So attacker, done. Marcus Thuram, if we can get him. If we can't, I think we just have
Schalke to... Schalke taking him?
Yeah, I think he's not going to Schalke. Schalke shit.
But, not in the Bundesliga 2, bro.
Yeah, he's absolute trash. But they're probably going to get relegated. Thuram's going to be there for a bargain, I take him. Centre-back, I've taken a bit of a gamble and I've gone... Because I think when... There are disadvantages to being a club that's not at the absolute top table, but there are advantages as well. And those include being able to take gambles on young players and hope they come good. So I think, like, I was thinking about going to Celtic and going for Christopher Ayer.
Oh my God.
Because I was looking at Sampdoria's Joachim Andersson, but they're already talking about Spurs and United for him. So he's not coming to fucking Leverkusen. And with someone like Thuram, you're like, okay, pull the trigger early, spend our money, offer him guaranteed minutes and a big contract, maybe we can get him. Around the rest of the players, you can't really do that. You can't do that for everyone. Leverkusen don't have the money. So I'm going to go for Aya because I think...
Need Hamill. I don't know a thing about this guy.
Well, he's spoken to me about him before. And the thing is...
I think he rates him.
Yeah, I think he does. And this is the thing. These players don't... You always end up being the club buying a player from the club that bought the player from Celtic and then you pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go straight in there, they normally sell pretty reasonably. We always hear like, oh, Moussa Dembele is going to be 40 mil, went for 20. Kieran Tierney, they're like, he's going to cost 50 mil, he'll probably go for 25.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
So I think with Christopher Ayer, I reckon we could get him for 10. I really do. Maybe sub that. Like, he's 20 years old. He's 21 in April. He's 6'5". Okay. He's pretty quick.
He is, yeah. I've watched him in the old firms, and he's a large boy.
Yeah, he's pretty quick as well. Like, he can get about. He's very one-footed, but he is nice on the ball. Last season, I actually found something which said that he was playing about one secondary shot assist per game, which basically means the pass before the pass that leads to the shot.
Okay.
So he's the killer ball, essentially. And he was playing one of those a game. So I was just like, that's pretty decent for like a 20-year-old centre-back. I'm okay with that. It's hard to find stats for the SPFL, but the thing that stands out when you watch him is his dribbling ability. Like, a lot of the time what happens, or what happened under Rodgers is that the midfielders would split wide at Celtic and there'd be this big gaping hole in the middle of the park and Ayer would just sprint into it, would take the ball and just run into it. And he's really, really dangerous. He was completing 1 to 1.5 dribbles per game in the Europa League this season and last season. So he's able to do it against better defences as well. Obviously decent in the air. Pretty good defensive numbers, the ones I could find. But again, those were in Europe. So I think that he'd be somebody who, if he doesn't bang immediately, we've still got Tar, we've still got Dragovic, we've still got Yedvai.
Game sheet.
If he does bang immediately, we've got Tar and Ayer.
He's like an 8 million euro signing as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's nothing.
You know, a big fee.
So I think Celtic is actually probably like an under-leveraged market for teams like Leverkusen, because actually they do produce a pretty fucking good standard of player. Mm. Like, as much as we talk shit about Celtic, the players who come out of there are good.
I think there are
other centre back
called Benkovic is pretty useful as
Benkovic
well.
Is on loan from Leicester though.
He's on loan.
And now obviously he's been playing at Celtic. Now he's got his Celtic manager at Leicester.
Why is he not getting a look in?
I don't know. He's barely played this season. Yeah, I don't understand. But in fairness, I mean, like, he's got Maguire, he's got Evans.
There might be some options in the Premier League relegation candidates as well, you know. Like, I was thinking about, you know, Ben Gibson's barely got a minute, man.
He was injured for a long time.
If Burnley drop, there's some decent defensive talent. James Tarkowski will get picked up by a decent side.
Yeah, but I think he'll go to a Prem side because I think he'll get that. They know they'll get a... get a kind of homegrown.
Yeah,
I'd rather from any Fulham or Huddersfield centre.
Really, I was going to say Fulham. Like Alfie Mawson's barely played. I think Alfie Mawson's quite talented.
Callum Chambers is a fine.
But are any of these boys going to be willing to take the jump as well? It's not. English players do tend to be a little bit reticent.
I think in this case maybe. Like, if your choice is the Championship or competing for Champions League football, I think then they do it.
Could always take Tim Ream.
Don't ever talk about Tim Ream on this podcast
What about Dennis Odoi, who might genuinely be the worst player in the league? But I don't know. I think that Ayo would be a bit interesting. And I've also gone, I mean, we're seriously in the hinterland here. Like, we're finding players. We're in the bargain basement.
We're indeed. Yeah,
we're big
time. So I've got a fullback out of Rennes.
Okay.
Jesus. Called Rami Bensebaini. I decided to go for someone defensive because basically he's backing up Vendel and Vendel plays defensively. So I ruled out people like Teo Hernandez. I ruled out Bernardo at Brighton because he has enough minutes that they're going to keep him. They're going to stay up probably. So
this is a backup left back.
Yeah, this is a backup left back, but maybe somebody who can grow into it. Who knows? And this guy can play also DM and centre back.
Oh, that's
6'1", despite being a left back. He's 23, wins about 60% of his aerial duels, which is fine. And most importantly, he's just a good defender. Like 4.6 times he wins possession a game. When he makes a tackle, he gets it right 79% of the time. So he rarely gets dribbled past. Doesn't really dribble, doesn't really create, don't really care because that's not his job. That's Weiss's job on the other side. I think sometimes we get into this thing where we're like, they've got to do everything. And I think sometimes it's okay to be like, this guy's just going to defend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no one's
like
getting past him.
Throw that at him as well.
Yeah, though Wan-Bissaka is actually a really good dribbler and has better creative numbers than
he gets credit for.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's also because like the world's best fullbacks is what's most viewed. So everybody's like, wow, this is what the standard fullbacks is. And that the world's best fullbacks are the fullbacks that can do fucking anything.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, it's good to have a fullback who can do everything. And at the top level, you do need that. But at the level below the top level, you don't. You need guys who can do their job. Mm-hmm. Like, and actually, most sides play with like a one-side dependency, right? So like, they say, okay, we do most of our attacking down this side and we rely on that fullback to get forward.
Yeah, I mean, even Chelsea.
And famously, you know, you play like Azpilicueta on one side and Ivanovic on the other. Because you've got one really aggressive fullback, so you have one really defensive fullback, and that's sensible, I think. But the person I'm most excited about when I'm looking at this team is Ismail Benacer, who is 21. He plays for Empoli, and he used to be at Arsenal.
Did he?
We sold him for 900k in 2017.
This is Serge Gnabry. Scenario.
Yeah. I mean, he looks amazing and he's 21 and he's doing it in a top five league. I mean, he looks good. Like, he's a really good defender, 4.4 tackles and interceptions per game.
But what position is he, sorry?
He's central midfielder.
Oh, okay.
But he's just so good at getting the ball forward. He's got 1.8 dribbles a game completed, very rarely fails. And that ranks 21st among all central and defensive midfielders in Europe. Nice. Which is pretty good. Like, I mean, and the drop-off, by the way, is also a long way. Like, the guys who kind of make over... in central midfield who complete over 1.5 dribbles a game, there's a big drop off from them to like the other people. I also looked at Ibrahim Sangare of Toulouse, but I've talked about him before. I mean, he's really a dream guy. 5 tackles and interceptions game, 2 dribbles. Great passer. But Benacer, when he does attempt to dribble, he completes it at 81%.
Wow.
Lick. Okay. Which is like...
That's you amazing. Could,
and at 21, good. You see how he might develop, like, fill out a bit physically and end
Where's
up... your kind of
what country?
He's Algerian, I think.
Okay.
He's going to end up... He could end up being your Moussa Dembele type, you know, who can just drive through the centre of the park. Really good passer, 86% pass accuracy, 4.5 successful long balls a game with a 69% success rate on his long balls. So that's pretty good.
Joe and me are impressed. Right
yeah, he's he sounds like a hell of a...
Napoli tried to sign him in January. And the reason it didn't go through is because basically Arsenal had a buyback option, but they also had a sell-on clause. So they could have decided, right, okay, we're going to take like, I think it was 3.6 mil if you sell him to Napoli for like 10 mil.
Yeah.
Or we're going to buy him back ourselves.
And then sell him.
Somehow stalled on it, and Napoli didn't end up going through with the deal. Now, I think they might return in the summer, and if they do, you're not going to get him. And if Arsenal come back in for him, you're not going to get him. But if they don't, and Napoli have just... Napoli were like, okay, we wanted to get him in January to give us a boost, but now we're in the summer, maybe we'll take our time looking for targets. I reckon if you go straight in there as Leverkusen and offer big money, like wage-wise, I think you'll get him. And for under 11 million quid, I mean, that's that to put him in your midfield with Havertz, you've got a midfield that has like a combined age of 40 and looks like...
Yeah.
Potentially nice a Champions League level midfield. So I don't know. I think that those transfers would help a little bit. And I think Boss is a good continuity manager for the time being. Like,
how long before he gets found out, though? I feel like Peter Bosch has a six-month shelf life.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he gets found out. Well, he didn't in the Eredivisie. And yes, Ajax have like a massive advantage. But he didn't in the Europa League either until the final. Like,
but he did eventually in the Eredivisie. And then he did at Dortmund.
He didn't eventually in the Eredivisie. He left to go to... Dortmund.
But did he win the title? Did he win the title? I don't think he won the title. I don't think he did. But maybe that's nothing. That's not necessarily a harsh.
But yeah, look. I think though, if you just get beaten by Dortmund and Bayern and Leipzig every season, you lose all 6 of those games. But you just beat up on the rest of the league.
Yeah, which is entirely possible.
And as much as we're like, oh, the Bundesliga, what a hotbed of managerial talent. There is some dross that bounces around the Bundesliga, like Huub Stevens, for instance. Like. You kind of look at them
or
and you're
Hoob.
Yeah, but you look at these people and you're like, oh my god, like where have they come from? Because everybody thinks
it's quite an exciting appointment, isn't it?
Yeah. So well, it's attacking and you can see the continuity between like Roger Schmidt to Peter Bosz. You can see the similarities.
Seems to be working.
So I think, yeah, I mean, like, look, I'd happily get Schmidt back from China if he fancies it. Or if I can
think
get
he fell out quite
or,
badly.
I mean, the dream, yes, Pablo Machin. If you're Bayer Leverkusen, you should absolutely sound him out and say, would you be willing to come to us in the summer? Because he'll make you a Champions League club. But for the time being, I think they're okay, and I think maybe at the end of next year, I'd be like, let's take stock of where we are. If we're not back in the Champions League, or if we're not capable of competing against the bigger sides, then we find a new manager.
So there we have it.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that your section done, Pat, on Bayer Leverkusen? So we've done Bayer Leverkusen, we've done Schalke, and we've done RB Leipzig.
What a roundup.
Kind of a close range, a long range, and a medium range for you in terms of how we would get teams competing with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund to win the Bundesliga. If you've got any ideas or suggestions about teams and changes that you'd make, why not send them us on Twitter, get involved in the conversation on Reddit. But for now, we're moving on to facts. With Rafa Benitez.
Facts.
Okay, as ever, I have got on my piece of paper one truth and two lies. This is not a Chris Hamill situation. One truth and two lies, gentlemen. Are you ready for this? The theme here is celebrity encounters.
Ooh.
Nice little combined ooh there. okay, so my number one. Owen Farrell and I had lunch... and really hit it off over a pork pie.
Really?
Who is that?
Owen Farrell
England
is...
England number 10.
Yeah, and
captain
of the rugby team.
Okay.
I once got into a dance floor scuffle with Luke Shaw.
Can imagine that.
Okay.
Henry Slade, another England rugby player,
yeah, I know that.
Buys me and my friends a round of slippery nipples every time he sees us on a night out.
How often is that?
Probably once every 4 months.
I know that you know him. I know that you know him quite well.
Okay, so let's go start for with it.
Let's start with the first one.
Where do you want to start with?
Owen Farrell.
Okay.
Why did you have lunch with him? Where? What sort of pie? You know,
I had
a bit of background.
I had lunch with Owen whilst I was shooting an advert for, I think it was Canterbury, at the Millennium Stadium. He was one of the ambassadors alongside a few other rugby players.
And what were you?
I was, I don't know, like a runner, like an intern, basically, for a digital marketing agency that were doing the digital marketing for Canterbury. Me and Owen were there, sat down. He was slightly younger. I was in like my second year of university, so that would have been, what, like 4 years ago, something like that. And he, genuinely lovely guy, and we just immediately clicked. Just sat next to it at a table with probably 10 people, and me and him just had immediately same
wavelength. You're quite different, you and Owen Farrell, though. He's quite known to be quite serious.
He wasn't serious when I was talking to him.
Really?
I mean,
maybe
he's
camera persona.
Very northern.
Yeah.
Very, very northern.
Wigan, though.
Okay.
But I found that he had a very dry sense of humour, which was quite funny.
Interesting.
It hit it off quite well over a pork pie.
Okay. Number two?
Number two was, the dance floor scuffle with Luke Shaw.
Where?
This was in Orange Rooms in Southampton.
Oh my god, Orange Rooms.
Back when he was playing for Southampton, I was at university. He was out with a few of the Southampton players and a few of his own friends who were...
Which other players? Anyone recognisable?
I can't remember. I think Jay Rodriguez.
Of course.
Was potentially involved.
Of course he was there. Regular.
And they were quite... they owned the dance floor, I think it's fair to say. They had their own little VIP segment that led directly onto the dance floor, and they were being quite loud and quite...
We're in orange rooms.
People's in their in people's faces. And it ended up with one of my friends throwing a drink over another one of his friends, and then it kind of just...
Oh, wow.
A bit of a brawl occurred, of which Luke Shaw was kind of hanging on the back, and it was all
were
a bit
hanging
of a
on the back as well?
I was hanging on the back. And
it was what was Jay Rodriguez doing?
I don't know. Sat in
the middle.
Sat in the corner injured, probably.
Yeah, definitely injured.
But either way, yeah, Luke Shaw was kind of involved. He pulled up as well in like a Range Rover directly out front of the club and gone straight in front of the queue. Like, Orange Rooms is in a place called Bedford Place in Southampton where you can't drive into, but there's a car park, and he pulled his fucking Land Rover straight through the crowd, and it's just a bit like
a bit muggy.
Okay, that's my Luke Shaw one. And my third one was Henry Slade and the slippery nipple.
What is the slippery nipple?
Slippery nipple is half Bailey's, half Sambuca.
God above, what a combination. Why is this your traditional drink?
So when Exeter Chiefs first made it to a Premiership rugby final, which was 3 years ago now, I was out with my friends. They travelled back 2 days later to Exeter, and then the following weekend, so the final was on a Sunday, and they went out the following Saturday with the Exeter Chiefs in Exeter, and the fans could go and stuff like that. And where they end up is a place called Timepiece, which is like one of the few local clubs in Exeter. They are there every weekend religiously. Like, you can just go up and chat to them, whatever. They're pretty big, like, superstar rugby players now. And after the first Premiership final loss, we lost the first one to Saracens, we got chatting with Henry Slade, and he bought like a round of like 30 slippery nipples for like five of us. And ever since that, whenever I see him on a night, I was always like, I don't even remember my name, and he's just like gets around slippery nipples in.
Fair.
He remembers some of my other friends'
names. Do you go up to him though and try and make sure he notices you?
Yeah, for sure. And we're always like, Henry, and he's like, oh, fucking these little geeks.
I mean, my instinct says the last one's the most plausible, but also sometimes when someone knows that you know they have a connection with someone, they use that against you, right? So I can imagine him being like, Doogie will know that I know Henry Slade.
Because we've talked about Henry Slade. Yeah, he's well aware of it.
And therefore I can embellish.
Yeah. The one I think that's least likely to be true.
Sure.
I'm working backwards from that is the Luke Shaw one.
Sure.
Okay.
And Jay Rodriguez being in there, and it just seemed a bit too implausible. Even though I've met your mates, very nice, but I can imagine them throwing a drink on
Wasn't those mates. Those were my exit friends, and this was university.
Okay. Well, either way, I don't think the Luke Shaw one's true.
I'm going to go, I think my instinct is that the truth is number one.
Owen Farrell and a pork pie.
Yes. I think it's maybe not a pork pie. That might be the lie. But no, I feel like the first one is just kind of plausible.
Yeah.
Like Joe is quite easy to get along with. I imagine if you're like a young sportsman, Canterbury, you'd be like,
it did sound quite slick actually.
Yeah, I don't even remember whether it was a pork pie either. It was like I was changing, I was definitely eating a pork pie. I can't remember
what Owen was eating. Having.
Yeah. Pork pies are a gamble though because of the jelly. I'm not into it.
Yeah, I quite like pork pies.
I like the idea
of it. I spent a bit of time in Melton Mowbray growing up, which is where
they're
from. And they're pretty good down there.
I'd rather go for like, I find a Scotch egg to be less unreliable.
And I like
it's the jelly. It's just the jelly.
Yeah,
I can't do with it.
That whole gelatine. Anyway,
okay, let's make a decision.
I say number one.
I'm happy with
Owen
Farrell
truth
sharing lunch as being the truth.
Is that we committing to?
Let's commit to it. Let's go for it. Let's lock it in.
You guys are. Correct.
Yes,
it was indeed Owen Farrell with me eating a pork pie. Can't remember what he was eating. Very, very nice guy.
Really, I'm so really pleased lovely by that, guy. He's known as quite boring.
I don't know what I mean. That was a very like short interaction, yeah. Like over a day. So yeah, I don't know what he's like over the course of a long time.
Plus, it's possible he would be more boring. Anyway.
Luke Shaw was in a nightclub with Luke Shaw. Did pull up in Land Rover, but we didn't get in a scuffle.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. He was also
I was
in like his own area.
He's
in his own
going to football,
he was in his own area, and it was just constant girls going up to them. Yeah. And Henry Slade regularly do see him on that side, but not buying slippery nipples.
Do you interact in any way?
My friends do, I don't really.
So they know who?
They know him personally, okay. But I don't really know him, so I've just like stood around and he's stood around.
Cool.
So yeah. Don't do
next
really
time you ask him to buy you a slippery nipple.
I will say,
so
can you buy me a slippery nipple, Henry? And he'll probably say, the fuck are you?
And you'll say, I really need material for facts on my podcast.
I will. So that is today's episode of Sunday Vibes Extra Time. Thanks very much for tuning in, listeners at home. Thanks to Doogie Critchley for joining
Thank
us.
You.
Patrick Van Straten. I imagine Christopher Hamill will be back next week.
Maybe.
This is last week before he goes on holiday, so he probably will be. If you've got any podcast topic suggestions you want to see us cover, come and join us on Reddit. Send your suggestions in on Twitter. Get in contact on all of the normal social medias. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Don't forget to check out Now TV's Sky Sports Mobile Month Pass for just £5.99. For more information on the Mobile Month Pass, just search Now TV Sport.